Rabbi Sai, and as always, thank you all for coming. Start off the week in the midst of Limud HaTorah for Hashem today. Hopefully everyone is well rested. But whatever the case may be, we go through the year, and when you have the long Matzah Shabbos, the short Matzah Shabbos, whatever it is, we always start off the week with learning. Today's shiur is based on Pasuk in yesterday's parsha. The Torah tells us that after the war that took place between the kings and Avram came to the rescue of Lot, his nephew, so Avram, together with a group of his Talmidim, succeeded in not only rescuing Lot, but rescuing the king of Sodom and so forth, and achieving a great victory. So the Torah tells us that as a result of this, the king of Sodom attempted to reward Avram by giving him gifts. He offered him all kinds of, from the spoils of war, to which Avram Avinu said, "I refuse to take anything." He said, "Michut v'atzroch now, I will not take even a chut, even a string, even a sroch now, even a shoe strap, right? I will not take anything that you're offering me below somar ani asharti as Avram." Avram felt that this was an inyan of Kiddush Hashem, that people should not say that his sustenance came from the king of Sodom, but rather he wanted that everyone should realize that whatever he has comes from the direct his relationship with Hashem, that the Ribbon Shalom provides for him. So he said this pasuk that I will not take anything. Michut v'atzroch now, I will not take a string, a shoelace, or a shoe strap. To which the Gemara tells us, we have it here on the sheet, the Gemara well known, Masechta Sota, it's underlined towards the bottom of the page, Darash Rava. Rava said, Rava interpreted the Pasuk, Vistarach, Amar Avram Avinu, Imichut Vasroch, now that in merit of the fact that Avram Avinu said that he said these words, Imichut Vasroch, now that I refuse to take anything from you, the king of stone, Sazahu Banach Lebeis Mitzvahs. So his children, his descendants, merited that they should have two mitzvahs in the Torah. What are they? Chut shel tcheles uritzua shel tefillin. That they benefited, that they would have the chut shel tcheles, there would be a strand of tcheles in their tzitzis, and there would be the ritzua of tefillin, the strap of tefillin. And this was a reward, because he spoke about chut, a string. He said, "I will not take a string from you." So therefore, even a shoelace. So therefore, the reward for that was the chut shel tcheles, the string of tcheles, and sroch now, the strap of a shoe. So the reward was the ritzuas of tefillin. So it's just interesting. Yeah, I'm sorry.
How could this be? The Torah preceded Abraham.
Okay, that's a good question. But that question, I'm not prepared to answer. It's a very good question. The question is being raised that the mitzvahs in the Torah really preceded. We say that the others had the Torah. Okay, that's an interesting makom Ian to look into, but that is maybe for a different time when I have a chance to look into it. But for now, we will say that these two mitzvahs came because of what Avram said. So the Gemara says, it's interesting to see, the Gemara says, Bishlam Ritzua Shel Tefillin. So the Gemara says that what reward was this? The Gemara is looking somehow that it would be a reward directly, that there would be a direct benefit, not just the mitzvah itself, but in some way the mitzvah would be a direct, there would be a direct hana from this mitzvah. So the Gemara says, Tefillin, I understand. Because there's a pasuk, Barol Kol Ami Ha'aretz Kishem Hashem Nikra Alecha, right? It says that when the pasuk tells us that when the nations of the world will see that the name of God is placed upon you, V'yaru Mimecha, they will fear you. So the Gemara says further, V'tanya Rabbi Elazar HaGadol Omer, Eilu Tefillin Shavirosh, that this refers to the tefillin. Meaning that tefillin brings a certain respect, there's a certain splendor in tefillin, and the pasuk tells us, according to the drush of the Chazal, that when the goyim will see the Jews wearing tefillin, so they will have a certain reverence for them. The Gemara says, "Alchut shel tcheles ma'hi," but what is the direct benefit of the chut shel tcheles? By the way, this, I think it could be the answer to your question as well, because it could be that what the pasuk is saying, not just that there will be such a mitzvah, but that they will benefit from this mitzvah. There will be a direct benefit that the Klal Yisrael will have an enjoyment from this mitzvah. So that may be in the schus of Avraham. But anyway, whatever the case may be, so the Gemara says, what's the chutz of tcheles? The Tanya Hayrav Meir Omer, manishtanu tcheles mikol minei tzivonim. Right, Rav Meir said, why is it that tcheles was singled out from all the colors to be placed in the tzitzis? So the Gemara says, mipnei shav tcheles domo liyam, because the blue of the tcheles resembles the ocean, v'yam domo l'rakia, and the ocean reflects the color of the heavens, v'rakia domo l'kisei hakavod. And the sky is the same color as the Kisei HaKavod, and the Gemara cites a pasuk to prove this, which means that there is also a reward for the wearing of tzitzis, because as the Chazal tell us, that a person who fulfills the mitzvah of tzitzis is ki'ilu kibol p'nei hashchina. There's a special relationship, we say, in the yonim of tzitzis, we've spoken about in the past, that the mitzvah of tzitzis is a special schus, that a person who is careful in the mitzvah of tzitzis is zolcha v'roa p'nei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So therefore, these two mitzvahs, each one has its special benefit. You have the tefillin, and you have the tzitzis, and these came to the Klal Yisrael in the merit of what Avraham Avinu said. This is what we have in yesterday's parasha. Specifically, though, the Gemara singles out that the reward that Avram got was Ritzua Shel Tefillin, that they will have the straps of Tefillin. So I think that it would be worthwhile to invest a little time to discuss some halachos that pertain to the Ritzuas of Tefillin in particular, not just Tefillin in general, but to the straps of the Tefillin, because they are a very important component of Tefillin. And yet somehow we don't always pay heed to them. Now, it is well known that, you know, the halachas of tefillin, for some reason, are the type, from all the halachas in the Shulchan Aruch, there are many halachas that people learn and they realize that this isn't so simple, it's complicated, and therefore maybe I have to review it again at a later point. But somehow it became, in the Klal Yisrael, that the laws of tefillin, a person learns once and that's it. You learn it before, the boy learns it before his bar mitzvah, or a person who began putting on tefillin later on learns it at that point, and then that's it, we don't go back to look at it. But there are really many, many important halachas. Tefillin is a very important mitzvah, and there are halachas that we need to sometimes take stock of, to pay a little attention to, and particularly so, I think this is the case with the ritzuos of tefillin. Okay? So now, what I'd like to go through a few of the halachos that pertain to the straps of the tefillin. Now we know that a person who goes to purchase tefillin, so if you're, you know, very often we don't know exactly and we're a little bit at the mercy of the vendor, and you know, we try to go to a person who we trust, and you know, you don't know exactly what you're getting unless you're a big expert in the laws of tefillin, which few people are, so therefore it's so hard to know exactly what you're getting. But the fact is that we go to a person we trust, and what do we ask for? So a person who's somewhat knowledgeable in tefillin will say, okay, I want a certain type of batim, I want that the leather boxes of the tefillin, I'm not talking about the plastic that you put it in, the bias of the tefillin itself should be a certain way, right? This is where there's certain expertise. You go in Eretz Yisrael, you see there are people who are experts in this, in the manufacture of the batim of tefillin. I remember a couple of years ago I was in Eretz Yisrael and I was in a tefillin factory, and I asked the guy who was running it if he had just a sample, you know, maybe like a little souvenir that I could take home with me. So he was looking around. He had a few. I saw he had a number of them that he apparently had rejected. And, you know, I figured maybe he'll just give me one to, you know, why not? So he's looking around and he says, no, you can't have this one, you can't have this one, you can't have this one. This one you could have. And I asked him, what's the difference? You're not using any of them. Anyway, what do you care? So he said, it's because of the fact that we have a special way that we make it, and I don't want the word to get out. We make it a certain way, and, you know, we have a certain expertise in how we do it, and therefore the one that I'm giving you, nobody will be able to see how we do it. But the other ones, they will. Okay, whether that's right or wrong, you can make your own decision. But the fact of the matter is that this is that in the bottom of tefillin there's a certain expertise, and therefore yeah, people know that we ask for a certain, that we ask for a, you know, you people to care about that. They care about the size of the bottom, etc. Certainly, everybody knows that when you go to buy tefillin, we care about the parshios, right? The what's written in the Tefillin, the small scrolls that are written, the parshiyos, the four parshiyos of the Tefillin, that they should be written properly, and that they should be written by a person who has a nice handwriting and all kinds of persons, the Yiras Shamayim. So this also people know. So even though when you get the Tefillin, you don't see it because it's sealed up inside the Tefillin. But if you deal with a person who you could request that I want this and this person who's the expert, and it's possible to get such a thing. Very few people give any heed, pay any attention at all to the straps. Right, the straps are sort of what gets thrown in on the deal. Right, it gets thrown in on the deal, and you know, you like when you go to buy a lulav, you know, the thing that they call the kashifel, you know, that holds together the hadassim and the arabas, nobody pays any attention to that. Right, so somehow the ritzus that it's filling, we don't pay that much attention to, and even down the road, you know, people look at the tefillin to see, is it still kosher? Sometimes it happens, a person, maybe the tefillin get banged up a little bit, and they're concerned that they're not perfectly square. But we don't concern ourselves so much with the ritzuos. So I'd like to just bring to light a number of issues that come up with the ritzuos. Okay, now, to start off, how long do the ritzuos of tefillin have to be? Everybody knows that when you wear the tefillin, so generally speaking, you have the tefillin shel rosh, the ritzuos hang down, right? And it seems that they don't, if you notice, they don't hang down the same length. They're two different lengths, which is an odd thing. You may think the first time you saw it that the person who tied it didn't do a good job, that he was careless and it came out that way, right? We'll see in a moment that there's a reason it's supposed to be that way. Right, and the tefillin shel yad, very often, almost always, a person putting on the tefillin on his hand is extra. There is extra the strap itself. We know that the minhag that we follow depends exactly how you do it between Sfaradim and Ashkenazim. But the basic custom is that we tie the tefillin around our arm, which is all the Torah really says to do. Ukshartam lo'os al yadecha. Right, but then we go ahead and we wrap it around our arm seven times. And we wrap it around our finger, fingers a few times, right? How exactly you wrap the tefillin? Some people wind it away from their body, some people wind it in towards their body, some people make the seven a certain way, some people make a shin, whatever it is. There are different customs, but the fact of the matter is that in almost every pair of tefillin, right, you're going to have that there will be extra at the end that we just wrap around, the final wrap that we wrap around our hand. So how long exactly do these ritzuos have to be? So the halacha is that by the ritzuah of the tefillin shel yad, it has to be the length of the strap, l'chatchila, should be long enough that it could handle all of these wrappings that we do, meaning that it's not enough just that you could tie it around your arm, but it has to be able that you could tie it around your arm and then tie it on the upper, on the bicep, on the upper portion of the arm, and then wind it seven times around the lower arm, and then wrap it around your fingers. That's the shir l'chatchila. It does not have to have extra. In other words, if you have a pair of tefillin that doesn't have the extra, that doesn't matter. As long as it could make it for that, for the wrappings around the arm and the upper and lower and the fingers, that is the shir l'chatchila. B'dieved, if a person did not have that, which is not common in our times, but if a person did not have that, the minimum would be if a person could tie it around his upper arm, that's crucial, that's the part that's explicit in the Torah, and then it should make it that he could at least reach his hand. He could reach his hand with the strap. That would be the shir b'dieved. But in the tefillin that we have, anyone buys tefillin today will not, you would have the shir l'chatchila. Okay, as far as the tefillin shel rosh, so here there are two customs that are brought in the poskim. The straps of the tefillin shel rosh are not supposed to, for Kabbalistic reasons, not supposed to be equal, but the reality is that they're supposed to go, the one on the right side is supposed to be longer than the one on the left side. Okay, the right as it comes down, the one on the right is going to be longer. Okay, and there are two minhagim. There are the one opinion holds that the strap on the right side should reach a person's the middle person's navel, and the left side should just reach up to the person's chest. But that is not the common minhag. The more common minhag is that the strap of the right reaches all the way down to the area of the person's bris milah, and the left side reaches the person's navel. That is why that is. delve into, but I think it goes into a little bit of Kabbalistic teaching. But that is the accepted practice that we have by the length of the straps that it's filling. Now this is pretty much universal, and I don't think that here anybody would really have an issue. What I would like to focus on are, though, some points that come up that I think are very commonly issues. Okay, and the first thing which comes up, which is a very commonly an issue, is a halacha that we have in the Shulchan Aruch. We have it here on the sheet on page 2. It's a halacha in the Shulchan Aruch in the Hilchos Tefillin, Siman Lamed Gimel. The Shulchan Aruch says, based on a Gemara Maseches Menachos. Okay, I didn't put the Gemara on the sheet because it's just one line, and the Shulchan Aruch says the same thing. Okay, we have it underlined here. The Shulchan Aruch says, Ritzuos, Bein Me'or, Bein Miklap, Sheros, Ritzuos have to be made, it says previously, Ritzuos have to be made from the hides of kosher animals. Okay, the straps of tefillin must be made from the hides of kosher animals. Says the Shulchan Aruch, Halacha L'Moshe Mi'Sinai, Sheyiyu HaRitzuos Shchoros. There is a Halacha L'Moshe Mi'Sinai that the Ritzuos must be black. The Ritzuos of Tefillin must be black. Okay? In our times, people like to, you know, have all kinds of colorful items. Even you see sometimes Talasim that are, you know, have the various colored stripes. But the Ritzuos of Tefillin must be black. Where does it say that in the Torah? Nowhere. It doesn't say that. You look in all the four places in the Chumash where tefillin is mentioned. It does not say anything about the color of the straps of tefillin. For that matter, it doesn't say anything about the color of the bottom of the tefillin either. But we have an oral tradition. We have a local Moshe Mi'Sinai that the straps of the tefillin have to be black. Okay? So what does that mean? So you say, well, of course, you go ahead and you buy a pair of tefillin, and that's all we've ever seen. Nobody has ever seen anything other than that. You buy tefillin, and the straps are black. But what we have to take into consideration is that one of the realities of wearing tefillin, like any other piece of leather, is that if you wear it often enough, so eventually the color may begin to come off. And depending, really, the ritzuos, depending on how well they were dyed or the quality of the leather, right, the color may come off sooner than later, but almost always you rarely see a pair of tefillin that a person wears many, many, many years, we're talking about decades now. Right, tefillin, potentially, a boy gets in his bar mitzvah and should live to 120, wear it for many, many years. Right, so it's inevitable that at some point the color is going to begin to come off on some level from the ritzuos. So now, the question is, so what do we say? Is that a problem or not? Right? After all, you'll say, well, they were made black, so they were made black. So now I wore them, so alright, that's, you know, after all, I wore them. Why did the color come off? Because I wore them. Right? So because I was doing the mitzvah, and especially there's a certain stress that's put on the straps of the tefillin, because you wrap them tightly and they get pulled and they get, rolled around, so therefore it could happen. So you'll say, no, what could you do? That's what happens. But the poskim tell us that the halacha that says that tefillin has to be black doesn't just pertain to when the tefillin are manufactured, doesn't just pertain to when the tefillin are made to start out, but the ritzuos of tefillin have to be black, and they have to stay black. And they have to stay black, meaning that throughout the time that a person wears tefillin, the ritzuos of the tefillin have to be black. Okay? And we can see here in the Mishnah Berurah, if you look down to the Mishnah Berurah, Yudtes, so he says the following. So he says, Ayin b'baruch sha'amar, this is three lines from the bottom in the Mishnah Berurah section, Ayin b'baruch sha'amar, he says, you look in the Sefer called Baruch Sha'omer, the Mashmah Midvarav, the Mitzvah Ashchiron Achiyushcharos Ka'orev. He says, first of all, when we talk about the straps of tefillin being black, it means how black, there are various shades of black, right? How black does it have to be? So it's supposed to be a deep black. A deep black, the color of a raven, Shcharos Ka'orev. Then it says further, and here's what we're interested in. Vidah, you should know, the Imnis Yashnu, if they became old, if the straps became old, v'nismach mehen hashachrus, and the blackness became rubbed off, which happens. Sarach lahashchiron mechadosh. So the person has to go ahead and blacken the straps of the tefillin. Okay, ukidaliil. And then he says, and I apologize, I didn't copy the carryover onto the next page. He says, "Ubamakom hiduk hakesher." The Mishnah says that in the place where you tighten the tefillin, it is very common. Motzim ma'od lehismayach hashachrus. It's very, very common that it gets rubbed off, right? Because of the fact that there's going to be when the more it gets rubbed and the more it gets pulled, so it can happen that the blackness of the tefillin gets rubbed off. So this is a halacha. Now the posts can tell us, and it's clear in the Shulchan Aruch that the halacha that the straps of tefillin have to be black is always. It's always. It's not just when they were made. So therefore, this is an area of tefillin which is not so well known to people. That, you know, again, as I said, the people concern themselves with the batim. That's what they see. That's the main part of the tefillin, right? That when they purchase the tefillin originally, they check to make sure they have nice parshios, that the little scrolls are written nicely, and people will even check the tefillin every couple of years, depending on the custom. People will check the tefillin. But the fact is that you see very often that people pay attention to the tefillin and how they're wearing the tefillin, but the straps of the tefillin they don't pay much heed to. And the Shulchan Aruch is telling us that we have to pay attention to this. Now, does this mean that a person who's the blackness of the tefillin comes off has to automatically change and go purchase new rituals? So the answer to that is no, because it's a common thing. You don't have to go and purchase new straps necessarily. Very, very often they're salvageable. It just needs to be blackened. But how does one blacken it? So there's a halacha that all the components of tefillin have to be from kosher animals. Even the dye that is used for the tefillin has to be a derivative of kosher products. It has to be, if there's some animal extract that's in there, it has to be from a kosher animal. So therefore, there are, nowadays it's very popular, that they sell in stores, in Judaica stores, farm stores, that they sell the little items that the person can keep in their tefillin bag. I happen to have two such examples on me. They have here, in some places you'll see this little tube of tefillin paint, or they have nowadays, they got a little neater because this could get messy, so they have like a special type of magic marker which is called Sevel Tefillin. And these are very practical items that it's worthwhile that a person should keep with them. Because if the tefillin are not black, there's a question if one fulfills the mitzvah by wearing them. If the strat, you'll say, "Well, what do you mean? But I have the best parshiyos in the world. I went to the finest sofer in Yerushalayim. I paid top dollar for the tefillin." That's true. But you have to look at it the same way as a car. You could buy a beautiful car, the most modern model, but after you use it for a number of years, it needs some maintenance. It's going to need some maintenance, right? At least an oil change. You have to take, right? This is an oil change. We're not talking here about a front end replacement or a God forbid, a transmission. I shouldn't even say it, right? A transmission job, right? But we're talking here about an oil change. Tefillin need an oil change also. So what's the oil change? The oil change is that you have to look at the straps of the tefillin. It's not a big deal. It's not a big deal. In almost every shul, either the rabbi or people in the shul possess items such as this. These aren't the only two. I'm just using two examples. There are other items that have that color the tefillin. It takes literally a minute. You have to let it dry. That takes another few minutes. But to fix the tefillin takes a minute. But the difference between fixing the tefillin and letting it go could be the difference between fulfilling the mitzvah and not fulfilling the mitzvah. And we all run to shul with Mesiras Nefesh, right? Everyone gets up early, everyone works hard during the week, and we all make an effort to get to shul to run and put on tefillin, and this is something that we take great pride in, and it's important that when we go to do that, we should do it the right way. It's not a good feeling to say, "I'm putting on the tefillin, I'm not doing it the right way." So a simple thing, this is this is the oil change of tefillin. That's all it is. It's an oil change. Everyone takes in their car, or should take in their car, to get an oil change every so often, right? So the tefillin also, it needs an oil change. So you have to give a look. Now, the truth of the matter is, if you were fortunate to get very, very high quality straps, if the ritzuas of your tefillin was very high quality, which is often hit or miss, it's hard to predict, but generally they could tell you, you know, that if you go to a sofer, he could tell you they have different grades of ritzuas of tefillin. So the better ones will hold the color longer, but it's almost inevitable that a person who puts on tefillin for years, for decades, at some point this is going to happen. So it's worthwhile to this week, where we have the Avraham Avinu being rewarded with the mitzvah of tefillin, the straps of the tefillin, that we should have a little chizuk, we should pay a little attention to the straps of our tefillin to make sure that they are blackened. Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to get to that. Right. So this is a very important thing. Now, what happens sometimes is that people, when this happens, to come lamdanim, right? People start to, you know, say all kinds of rationale why it's not a problem. So there are basically two rationales that are offered by people that I've heard over the years why the fact that my tefillin paint has rubbed off is not an issue. The first one is invoking a genuine Talmudic principle called Rubo Kakulo, right, which says that if the majority of something is a certain way, so then even if the minority is not that way, it's kosher, right? This is a concept that we have. It's a din d'oraisa, Rubo Kakulo. However, the poskim tell us, for reasons that are beyond this shir, that the principle of Rubo Kakulo does not apply when it comes to this mitzvah. That when it comes to the straps of the tefillin, that we don't say that if the majority of it is black, it's as if it's all black. We don't say, in other words, even though a person who thought that is in a certain sense, you know, all right, that's a good way to, that's a good approach, right? That's a valid rationale. That's not just some rationalization that has no validity whatsoever. But nevertheless, by this mitzvah, the halacha is that it has to be kulo shachar. It must be completely black. We don't say rubo kakulo. That, yeah, go ahead.
What if you have a ritzuas that are longer than the minimum shear?
Okay,
shear.
Thank you. So the other one, which I was about to say, the other rationale that's offered is that if the ritzuas are longer than the minimum shear. So a lot of times it happens that on the extra, that for some reason the extra that gets wrapped around the hand, that for some reason takes a certain abuse, and that rubs off, and people say, that doesn't matter. Because you don't need that anyway. Right? That part you didn't need. So, right, I wrapped around my upper arm. That part is the most important. Right, then I did the 7 wrappings around my lower arm. Okay, which is what we all do in one way or shape or form or the other. Okay, and then we wrap it around our hands. I did that. Now the extra stuff that I wrap around my hands, or perhaps on the Shel Rosh where it's less common, but the part that hangs down past the minimum shear, which happens with the tefillin sometimes, right? So who cares? Let's make believe. You don't need that. I could take a scissor and cut it off. So if I could take a scissor and cut it off, the fact that it is not black should not hurt me. That is the other argument that is made, now this argument would only apply if it's by that part of the tefillin, right? Obviously, if it's by the upper part of the tefillin, then this argument doesn't hold, right? The first one would have, if it would have been valid, would have covered everything, because if you say Rubo Kakulo, so then that would be true no matter where the problem is. Yeah, go ahead, sir.
How about if it's longer, taking the ritzua off and turning it around?
Okay, hold on. Okay, so as far as, let's one thing at a time. As far as the extra part, this is discussed here on this page in the Bir Halacha on the left side. Okay, towards the bottom of the page, if you see with about, I don't know, 10 lines from the bottom. It begins about 8 lines from the bottom. It says Haritzuo Shkoro. So if you look in the Bir Halacha at the end of that line, he says Umistapachna in Minatora Daibacholecha Atkidei Shiuro. He says, I am not sure, says the Chafetz Chaim, if we say that really all you need is the shear, v'hasharu l'mitzvah l'noi ba'alma, and the rest of it is just to make it look nice, not such a big deal, or do we say, odilma, or perhaps we say, kivin di mechuberes kula kechada, that since it is all connected, tzricha lios kula shachar, that it all has to be black. The Chafetz Chaim here in the Bir Halacha discusses this very issue, and he doesn't come out with a conclusive psak, it sounds like he's leaning towards the more the stricter position that it would all have to be black. I don't think it's 100% clear the way he comes out. But the reality is that in our time, being that it's so easy to fix this problem, a person can fix it themselves. It's easier than an oil change because you can do it yourself, right? So it's worthwhile that a person should invest $1 or $2 in items such as this, right? It doesn't have to be doctor these things. You could find out, in any Judaica store, they carry these items, and you carry it around in your tefillin, and when the time comes that you need a little touch-up, so you do the touch-up job, okay? And it's worthwhile, even on the extra part, even though the case could be made. I saw in the book of Rabbi Daniel Neustadt, who puts out a book on the halachic discussions of the parsha and different things, that he has a quote there. I didn't see it in the Igros Moshe, but he has a quote there that Rav Moshe Feinstein said that the part that is up to the shear, that you have to be really scrupulous with. You have to be very careful. It should be completely black. And the extra part is only if it's... Only if it's highly visible. That's what he said. That's what he said. In other words, if it's hard to see, then you don't. It's not as big a deal. In other words, he held that there was a distinction between the part that was needed for the mitzvah and the extra. But like I say, it's not such a big deal to make everybody happy, and to make sure that the tefillin are black. Now it should be. That's a good question. So if they're not black, you should blacken them. Let's put it that way. we'll leave it on that. All right, if they're not black, you should see to it that they're blackened. Now, one of the realities of life is that, the painters will tell you this, that you have to match up colors exactly, a very, very difficult thing. And therefore, it's going to be difficult, it's almost impossible that any of these little, small implements that they sell for touching up tefillin will match the color of the dye that's on the strap exactly. And therefore, it's not going to look perfect. So therefore, and that's one reality. A second reality is that none of these things are really super long-lasting. This is meant to be a touch-up job, and it's a touch-up job that may need to be repeated over the course of a year, maybe more than once. So the fact is that if a person sees that his tefillin needs a lot of work, that the straps need a lot of work, it may be worth just replacing them. It's not a big ticket item. The straps of tefillin, the set of rituals of tefillin, are under 100 hours, could be well under 100 hours, depending on what type you get. I'm not putting an advertisement for the sofrim, but the reality is that if a person needs it, it's an integral part of the mitzvah. In other words, we should not take it as it's just a small thing. This is what the Torah is telling us, that Avraham Avinu was rewarded for when he said to the king of Sodom, I will not take even a shoe strap, so they were rewarded with the ritzua of tefillin. That's what the Gemara says. So therefore, the ritzua of tefillin is something that we should take seriously. But if it's a small thing and it rubs out here and there, so then a little touch up is not a bad thing to do. A person does not have to be neurotic when it comes to this. Anything that needs to be fixed, it has to be visible. In other words, if it's the type of thing that you can only see under a microscope or a magnifying glass, that you don't have to worry about, because halachically that doesn't matter, right? But it's something that's visible, that a person would see it at a glance. So that already, if you glance at the tefillin and you say, these tefillin need to be touched up, so then you should touch them up. Now, as Rav Shaffer mentioned, today they have come out with a new item. It's become, I don't know how long ago this was, the last year or two I've seen, that people have tefillin that is completely black, both sides. Now, the halacha Moshe Sinai that says that the straps of tefillin have to be black apply only to the outside of the tefillin, right? In other words, the outside part of the leather, the part that we wear out, right, is the part that has to be black, but the sides and the bottom do not have to be black. In fact, the Gemara says you could make them any color you want. If you want to, you know, make the bottom a different color, you could do that. The minhag is not to do that, but theoretically you could, right? But they don't have to be black, and we typically leave them undyed, the bottom of the straps. But in recent times, I think due to the fact that tefillin do wear out, the straps of tefillin do wear out, so an attempt has been made to sort of come up with long-lasting tefillin, right? They'll give you a warranty, you know, 7 years or 70,000 times you put on the tefillin, whichever comes first, right? Then they will guarantee you that the tefillin will not wear out. And how do they do that? They do that by dyeing both sides. In other words, their feeling is that if you soak the leather deeply, that the dye should go deeply into the leather, so then it'll be so deep that even if the top layer, first of all, it probably wouldn't peel so easily, but even if the top layer came off, it'll be black underneath. In other words, the reason, one of the issues that we have is that, in other words, if the layer of dye gets rubbed out, so then you're left with the rest of it, which is uncolored, which is, and that's what happens. So the thinking has become that, well, why don't we just make these black on black, that's what they call them, the black on black ritzuos, and by doing, everything's black, the top, the bottom, the sides, everything is black. So this is sold. There are those who, the traditionalists, say that this is not the Masorah, this is not the way tefillin was. I saw last night someone even claims he has proofs from Gemara that we see in Gemara's that the Amoraim did not wear tefillin like that, so if it's such a good idea, how come they didn't do it? So there is all the traditionalists say that we should still do it the way we do it. However, I think it has gained a wide acceptance that people have the black on black. It's up to a person. I think a lot of people are just by nature uncomfortable with such a thing. It's not the way we've seen tefillin all the years. But some sofrim are out there claiming that, listen, you know, if you want insurance, that you won't have a problem, so get these and then you'll have it. Right? It happens to be that it's not completely unheard of to have a black-on-black ritzua. It seems, it's unclear, but it seems that the Rambam held that that's the way they're supposed to be. And even though the Rishonim, the consensus of the poskim is not like the opinion of the Rambam, but nevertheless, there is basis for such a thing. But not saying that that's anything that a person has to do. You could get the regular ritzuos, but some heed needs to be paid to the ritzuos. That's the point. Now, just one final thing in this area is that if a person is going to touch up his tefillin, it is crucial that before he does it, he says three magic words. He says the words L'shem mitzvah tefillin or L'shem kedusha tefillin. He has to say, because there is a halacha that tefillin have to be processed l'shma, that they have to be made for the sake of the mitzvah. In other words, the ritzuos of tefillin cannot be made if they were just, you know, you went to some leather company and took the scraps, you know, from a belt. Let's say you go to a belt company and you'll take the extra pieces and say, hey, this would be a great ritzuah for my tefillin. So that is not acceptable, because the ritzuahs of tefillin have to be made for the sake of the mitzvah, right? So too the painting of it has to be done for the sake of the mitzvah. And therefore, if a person is going to attempt such an endeavor, he just has to remember, you can say it in English also, but he should say something to the effect that I am doing this for the sake of the mitzvah of tefillin, L'shem kedushas tefillin, L'shem mitzvah tefillin, and then he should go ahead and paint it. And I can tell you from experience that it solves a lot of problems, and it's a very simple thing to do. Okay, that is the first area of discussion when it comes to the ritzuos of tefillin. Another question, yes, if you have it in mind, it's good also for the Eved, but the poskim say that l'chadchila a person should say it out. If you didn't say that and you had it in mind, it's good also, but the Mishpura says that, but nevertheless, preferably a person should say it before he goes ahead and paints it. Okay, now, the next thing I would like to discuss is the question that comes up with chatzitza with the straps of tefillin. Meaning, do the straps of tefillin have to go directly on my skin, or what happens if there is something that interferes with the straps of the tefillin and my arm? And the two most common examples of this would be one of them, a medical type of situation where a person has a cast on their arm, right, or a bandage. That's one situation where it comes up. And the other thing which comes up by everybody is, do I have to take off my watch? Do I have to take off my wristwatch when I wrap the tefillin? Or can I just leave it? I always wait. I get up in the morning, I put my watch on my arm, and then and that's the way it is. And I wrap the tefillin, and I'll wear the tefillin. I don't have to take my watch off. I'll wrap the tefillin over my watch. So here we have a discussion also. This is, if you turn up to page 3, we have here the Shulchan Aruch says, in Simen Chav Zayin, Tzif Dal, the Shulchan Aruch says, Lo yehei dover chotzei bein tefillin lebesaro. There should not be any sort of interference. There should not be any sort of item that is interfering between the tefillin and a person's skin. Lo shna shel yad, lo shna shel rosh. Regardless of whether you're talking about the tefillin that you put on the arm or the tefillin that you put a person puts on his head. That is what the Shulchan Aruch says. Now, what does that mean? Is that only by the tefillin itself, by the batim, or is it even by the ritzuos? So comes the Ramah and says, Hagav bedafka b'tefillin, that this law is only said by the batim of the tefillin itself. Avol b'ritzuos, but when it comes to the straps of the tefillin, ein lahakfid, you don't have to be concerned. The straps of the tefillin is not a big deal if there is some separation. It's only by the batim themselves. This is the psak of the Ramah. However, if you think that seems strange, so that's not what we're used to thinking. So the Mishnah Brura in Sivkot and Tev Zayin brings from a whole slew of achronim that many of the poskim who came after the Ramah disagreed with this ruling, and they said that no, that you can't just say that. You can't just say that. That the rituals don't matter. They bring proofs that they'll show you that the rituals do matter. And what they came out with was, that we sort of a compromise, and that is that the main part of the ritsua we have to be very diligent with. In other words, the part of the strap where you actually tie on the tefillin onto your arm, that you have to make sure that there is nothing underneath it. That you have to be very, very careful to make sure that sometimes it happens, a person wearing a long sleeve shirt, you roll up the shirt and you don't roll it up enough and it gets stuck and you don't realize it, that it gets stuck under the kesher of the tefillin, under the knot that the person makes around his arm. So that, the poskim say, despite the Ramah's ruling, according to the Ramah, there would be no issue, don't worry about it. It doesn't matter as long as the bias itself is on your arm. As long as the box is completely on your arm, then the strap doesn't matter. That's the Ramah's ruling. However, the later poskim say that no, that we can't be so lenient, and they draw the line that the part that gets where it gets tied onto your arm, or by a person's head, by the shalrosh, the place where it gets tied onto the head, that's where you would have to be careful. But beyond that point, it would not make a difference. And this is brought in the Mishnah Brura, that this is the halacha. And that being the case, so it would seem clear from the ruling of the Mishnah Brura that a person would not have to take off a wristwatch. Because the fact is that what's going to be the issue? The issue is that I'm wrapping the tefillin, so I'm going to wrap the tefillin. It's going to, part of the strap is going to go on my watch. Well, okay, the poskim tell us that the issue of chatzitza does not apply. According to the Ramah, it only applies by the bias itself. And according to the Mishnah Brura, who brings the stricter authorities, even they say that it's only by the part that you wrap around, that where you tighten the knot around your arm. But the part that's wrapped around the lower arm, right, the nerves, the upper arm, that part we have to be machmer. But on the lower arm, or on the person's fingers, right, so then, on the hand, that you would not have to be medaktik. And it seems from this clearly that a person would not have to take off their wristwatch. So you'll say, so how come people do? Right, so how come? Now, the truth be told, not everyone does, right? You see, I've seen people who didn't take off their watch. But I think the natural tendency is, and everyone assumes, that you have to take off your watch when you put on the tefillin. So if you turn over to page 4, right, that there are only one or two sources for this stringency, for this chumrah, and it's brought here, the bottom section is the Sharmatian Balach. He brings here one of the poskim from the recent generation, brings down in the middle paragraph, he says, V'olsen she'esh lehem sha'onei yad smudim al yadam, people who have wristwatches on their arms. So he brings that from poskim, from the big poskim, Magen Avraham and the Taz, that there is no issue. And he quotes the Mishnah Berurah that there is no issue, and he quotes the Shulchan Aruch HaRav that there is no issue. But then he brings one authority, it says at the very end of that paragraph, Shal Shachuvah's Dovid Mesharim, Dan Shom Be'inyan Min B'mino Chotzeitz V'dayta L'Hachmer. There is one of the later poskim, Dovid Mesharim, who says that it could be that it is a chatzitza even by the arm. So, The truth of the matter is, it's quoted, some people say that psak was retracted, that he said that, and then later on, even the person who said this chumra took it back. It's unclear. I think the common custom is that people take off their watch, because it's like a hither mitzvah, you know, it's nice, why should you have anything interfering if you're supposed to put it on your arm, so why should it be obstructed by anything? But according to the letter of the law, it is not necessary. So therefore, if a person has an issue with this, that they don't want to take off their wristwatch, the truth of the matter is, you really, according to the overwhelming consensus of the poskim, you do not have to. However, as I say, somehow the minhag Yisrael, it became common practice that people do it. Rabbi Avadi Yosef in his Svarim, Yabi Omer, discusses this, and he also comes out that he says you don't have to, but if a person is stringent in this, so tavol of bracha, so he should be blessed. So therefore, the common practice is to do it. I'm not saying that should be changed, but if somebody has a hard time doing that for whatever reason, or if you've never done it and you're not used to doing it, the halacha is a person does not have to take off their watch. That is as far as the halacha of chatzitza with the ritzuos of tefillin. The same thing would be if a person had a bandage on their arm, right? So a person has a cast. So again, the cast, the halacha is a person, it happens, especially teenagers, or the guys playing ball, breaks his arm, and now that's the arm he puts on the tefillin. So he has his arm in a cast, the lower arm is in a cast. So the halacha is that if, as long as the bias of the tefillin can go on his arm, so then he could put on the tefillin, and he could even say a bracha. In other words, the Mishnah Berurah says it. I'm not going to read it to save time, but the Mishnah Berurah in this piece that I just read comes out that even if the cast extends to the upper arm, but if the bias itself can go on his skin, in other words, if the bias can go on his skin, but the strap, even in the upper arm, is going to go over a cast, then a person could put that on and say a bracha. And say a bracha, and it's no problem. You're fulfilling the mitzvah of tefillin, because we rely, in a case of need, we rely on what the Ramah said, that in a case of need, there is no chatzitza, there is no problem of obstruction by any part of the strap. And therefore, the bias itself, that there is an issue, that, as we'll see in a minute. But the strap of the tefillin in a case of need, and a medical need, certainly would be a valid need, so then a person could put on the tefillin even obstructed. If the bias itself is going to be put on a cast also, then a person should not say the bracha, because that already is a much bigger issue. However, if the bias can go on the skin and the rest of the, all of the strap is going to be obstructed by a cast, there's no problem with that, and you could go ahead and say the bracha on the tefillin. You should still do it, wrap the tefillin over the, shouldn't say that, well, forget it, I'll just ignore it. You should wrap the tefillin the same way it always wraps it over the cast, and that is valid with a bracha, and it does not pose a problem because it's a case of need. Okay, the same thing is brought in the poskim if a person had an issue on a person had on their head some sort of issue. It's discussed in the poskim a case of a person who for some reason needs to have his head, he can't have his skin, he has a problem with the skin on his scalp, and therefore he needs to wear some sort of covering on his head. So again, as long as the bias, as long as the actual box sits on his scalp, if the strap is not, it's not a problem. B'di'evet, in other words, in a case of need, it's not a problem. We rely on the Ramah's lenient ruling. And that would be true if it was a bandage or a band-aid, whatever it would be. Okay, the last area I just want to finish up with here is when we're talking about the issue of chatzitza. So the in the more modern times, so the question comes up with what about a person who is wearing a hairpiece, a person who's wearing a toupee, so is that considered a chatzitza for the tefillin or not? So this was a similar question, not exactly as strict, but a question is also discussed in the poskim. If a person has very long hair, if a person grows a lot of hair on his head, is that an issue? Now, in general, we have to understand the halachic principle that hair is considered part of the body. Anything that's a natural outgrowth of the body is considered halachically part of the body. Right? So even though Hasidim have the custom that they shave their heads and things like that, but we hold the halacha that we're a little lenient, that a natural outgrowth of the body is considered part of the body, and therefore if a person puts the box of the tefillin on their hair, so that's not a problem. You say, well, it's not on my skin. That, all right, but that's part of your body. So if that's part of your body, so then there's absolutely no issue. The question comes up, but if a person has an excessive amount of hair, right, which today we see in all kinds of shapes and sizes, so that is discussed in the poskim. To make a long story short, the commonly accepted practice by most people is following the lenient ruling of the Aruch HaShulchan that hair is not a chatzitza, even if it's a lot of hair on a person's head, so long as that is the hair that comes from that part of his head. But sometimes people who are losing hair on the top of their head, so they maybe grow hair on the other parts of their head longer and wrap it around the front of their head, that would be an issue of a chatzitza of tefillin, because that's not the hair that belongs there. In other words, when we say that hair is a natural outgrowth of the body, that's the hair that is in that place, the natural outgrowth of the body. But if it's not, then it was placed there, so then it could be a chatzitza. So again, when it comes to the straps of the tefillin, maybe you could take a lenient position because you have the Ramah's ruling, even though you could decide whether that's considered a great need to do, but when it comes to the bias, if it's hair that was wrapped around, the person really shouldn't do that. When he puts on his tefillin, he should move the hair away, right? But having a large amount of hair, a person has an afro, so we rely on the psak of the lenient psak of the Aruch HaShulchan. This is in today's generation common shaila. The hairstyles ought to have all kinds of different things. So we rely on the Aruch HaShulchan's psak that hair is not a problem. However, a toupee is not the same thing necessarily. So the halacha is as follows. The halacha is discussed in the Igros Moshe here on page 4, where he has a short tshuva that he has on this topic. And basically he makes the following decision. He says, if a person has a hairpiece that is going to be left on their head permanently, if it's going to be left on their head permanently and not taken off, then you can consider that also part of the body. In other words, if it'll stay forever, that would not, that, then that's not an issue. That's not an issue. What's that? Sleeping, yeah. Once it gets put on, it's there, right?
It's like woven in.
We have to call Dr. Shapiro, right? We hear the commercials on the radio, right? The hair specialist to find out exactly if this is possible. But the fact is that if that was the case, then Rav Moshe says then that's considered part of your body. However, if it is a piece which is taken on and off, so then he says that really that would not be the same. In other words, because then it's not really part of your body. It's just worn for cosmetic purposes. And then it, you could make the case that it, so when it comes to the straps, if it was only interfering with the straps that it's filling, so then, all right, we could be lenient with the Ramah's ruling. But if it's also the bias, which, you know, the tefillin shel rosh is supposed to be a person's hairline, so if it's going to be going over the toupee, so then Rav Moshe says that really a person should not wear it when he wears the tefillin. So you will say, but who's going to do that? You're going to be embarrassed, right? I don't want people to know, whatever the consideration may be. So he says, very practical ruling, that in shul he doesn't have to embarrass himself. He could wear the toupee with the tefillin in shul, but he should not say the bracha on the tefillin shel rosh, because really he's not... It's really not so simple that he's doing the mitzvah at that moment because it's over this piece. But when he gets home, he should take it off in the privacy of his own home. He could take off, should take it off and put on the tefillin again. He says it, but in shul, he doesn't have to. The person says, "I'm not. So I won't daven with a minyan. I'm embarrassed. I'm not going to go to shul." He says, "Better, you should go to shul and daven with a minyan, and he'll put on the tefillin." And just that, when he puts on the tefillin, shul should not say a bracha. But when he gets home later, he should do it.
At
home, you say bracha, yeah. Yeah. So these are basic halachas which pertain to the straps of the tefillin. As I say, another area which I'm not going to get into today because the shir is in its own right, but the final point I'd like to make is there is a basic reality. There is a basic reality with leather, that leather stretches. It's just the way it is. And therefore, you have situations where people wear tefillin not in the right place, even though they were fitted originally by a sofer. Right? And this is a very touchy area. A very touchy area of halacha, because we know by the tefillin shel yad it's not such a big deal, but by the tefillin shel rosh it's very, very common that the tefillin shel rosh is supposed to be by the person's hairline, is not supposed to come down farther onto a person's forehead. If it comes down farther than that, they need to be fixed. And then the person is not wearing tefillin the right way. It's not necessarily fulfilling the mitzvah if he wears the tefillin that way. So you have to get it. You have to get it changed. Now again, this does not. This is also an oil change. This doesn't require surgery, right? You don't have to bring it in to a tefillin expert and deal with rabbis who you've never seen before, and you know all kinds of heebie-jeebies that they're going to do to the tefillin. It's a simple matter. Generally speaking, again, in almost every shul, you could find somebody who is adept at changing the size of the knot that's on the tefillin shel rosh to make it smaller or bigger, it larger. If you can't find it, we have in this neighborhood, Baruch Hashem, people that we have Sofner, or Selmar, maybe others as well, but who could do it in 2 minutes. Could change the whole problem. But what happens sometimes is that people say, well, I don't have to worry because of the fact that when I had my tefillin originally, when I bought my tefillin, the sofer specifically customized it to the shape of my head. And therefore I know for a fact that the tefillin are kosher, how could they be no good? So the reality is that's not a valid argument because it stretches. It happens. It happens to everybody. The leather stretches. So if it's going to stretch, it could end up that it stretches to the point that it's now being worn in a place where a person is not yotzei. And I'm just saying this because people get very sensitive and touchy about this. And I remember I'll just end off with this. When I lived in New York, so there was a sofer in Queens where I lived. There was a sofer, I don't think he's in business anymore, you'll see in a minute why, that there was a sofer who was a very aggressive fellow, he was an Israeli guy, very, very aggressive. And when you brought him tefillin to be repaired, he would say, put it on first. I want to see if the tefillin, if you're wearing the tefillin right. So, and he had sincere intentions because he knew that it happens often, the common thing that people don't have the tefillin in the right place. That he figured, I have the guy in my store anyway, I'll correct him. So one time I happened to be sitting there, and an older man walked in, a man in his 70s walked in, and he said to the person, well, you want me to fix your tefillin? I have a policy. First put on your tefillin shel rosh. I want to see where it is. So the man put on the tefillin. And sure enough, it was not in the right place. It came down too far in the front of his head. So the sofer, who was a man probably in his early 40s, said to this older gentleman, he said, you know, I think, you know, it's no good the way you have it. It's no good. I have to change it for you. So this man looked at him and said, "You're telling me that I'm not wearing tefillin the right way? I've been wearing tefillin since before you were born." And he grabbed his tefillin in a huff and ran out of the store. And that was the end of it. Now this is a reality that people, for some reason, get very sensitive about this area, that maybe my tefillin not in the right place. But the truth is, if you think about it, tefillin is a mitzvah that you put on every day, but you don't see what it looks like. Or who sees what your tefillin looks like? Unless you look in the mirror, or you have one of these handy tefillin mirrors, right? Who sees it? The person sitting next to you sees it. So if that person says, you know, I think maybe your tefillin needs to be made a little smaller, there's no embarrassment in that. That's a natural thing that happens. That happens over time. It's not a reflection on the fact that you have a lousy pair of tefillin. It has nothing to do with that. It's just the fact that you have the finest tefillin in the world, but leather stretches. It's just the way it is. So therefore, this is the final point that the mitzvah tefillin, the beautiful mitzvah that we pride ourselves in, that we put on tefillin with mesiras nefesh, we get up early to go to shul, so we should do it. The finer points, as I started off to share, for some reason the halachas of tefillin people don't review. We view it that it's for kids. That part of Shulchan Aruch is for 12-year-olds. You know, so therefore it's beneath my dignity to look at the laws of tefillin. But sometimes we have to review a little bit just to make sure we're doing the right thing. It's not a transmission job, it's not a front end job, it is an oil change. That's all it is. And if you could bring in your car for an oil change, you could sometimes check your tefillin also in that manner. It doesn't require opening the boxes. Don't worry, you're not going to, who knows what's going to happen. You think, Lord knows what's going to happen to my tefillin. It's a simple thing, but if we take care of it, we could fulfill the mitzvah of tefillin the way it should be.